Cross City, happy Independence Weekend, and I hope that many of you are proud of America. I know that I am. There's a lot of things that aren't right, but there's a lot of things that are. We're still the greatest nation in the whole world, and I love that old Lee Greenwood song, God Bless the USA. And, you know, this weekend we're starting our summer series, and I've asked my son Zach, who is the high school pastor, to come and preach to us this weekend on the 3rd and on the 4th. And I just am so proud of him, and I would hope that you would give him a very good welcome as he comes to the stage.
Hey, Cross City, how you doing? I feel like the little version of me is like the little school pastor or something, not the high school pastor. But man, it's an honor. It's a privilege to be here with you. Happy 4th of July. I just need to give a shout out and thank my father for giving me this opportunity. Thank you for being here on a holiday weekend. Thank you for watching online. Maybe you're on vacation in the RV, in the living room, wherever you are. Thank you for being here. But 4th of July is one of my favorite holidays. There's watermelon to eat, fireworks to watch, pools to jump into. It's a time to also celebrate and remember our country, but the goodness of God for blessing us like a country, with a country like the United States. So we are free as a country, but we are free, more importantly, because and through Jesus Christ. And I think that is something worth celebrating today. But before we jump into our series, I do have three questions for you. Hopefully you're familiar with them. If not, we'll get there. Question number one, what's his name? There we go. Question number two, what's he like? Question three, how big is he? He's good and he is big, and I just thank you for doing that for me today. But we are in our summer series, and we don't have a title. It's just Summer at Cross City, but we're kind of thinking, hey, what would be a cool little thing to talk about for the next handful of weeks? John, the book of John will be picked back up in the fall, but for the summer, we're like, what can we do? And we came up with things Jesus said. Jesus says a lot of interesting things. And maybe in your Bible, it's in red letters. The four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they kind of go over the life and story of Jesus. He's the main character. He's the main teacher. And so the things that he says are powerful. And he says some really good things. He says some really interesting things, and he says some wild stuff, stuff that you're like, I don't understand what you're saying. And we are going to look at some of those things that at first glance, we might not totally and truly understand what he's trying to say. So for the next few weeks, we're going over the phrases of Jesus, which leads me to my question. Have you ever said something crazy before? Have you ever said anything that you've regretted? Like maybe you just kind of blurted it out and you're like, oh no, why did I say that? Maybe it was to a spouse, a sibling, a parent. Hopefully it wasn't a boss. And maybe you just said something and they're like, oh, I cannot believe you just said that. Anyone ever been there before? Anyone ever said anything they've regretted? Why aren't all your hands up? You guys are lying in church, okay? Man, I have so many examples that I could have given you. I'm going to give you this one. I was in high school. I was in French class. Don't ask me to speak French. I don't know anything, okay? Mistake number one, live in California and take French. I should have been in Spanish, okay? But here I am. I'm in French. And it's kind of winter time. And winter formal is just a few weeks away. And so when it's winter time, the sun isn't out as much. You can't really get tan all that easily. So what happens is the ladies like to get a little thing called a spray tan. So I'm in French, pulling my binder out, and this girl walks in, and she got a spray tan, and I just take one look at her. She thought she was so cute and confident. I just take one look at her. I didn't even think before I said anything. I just blurted it out. I said, who let the Oompa Loompa in here? And I'm just like, oh my goodness, she was so orange. She was ugly, Texas orange. It was disgusting. I threw up a little bit, and I was just like, wow, why are you? Okay, I'm exaggerating a little, but I did scream at the top of my lungs. She is orange. The whole class looked at me and was like, what are you doing? I was like, I wasn't thinking. I'm sorry. Sometimes we just say things before we think about it. Except for Jesus. Even though he says some really interesting and odd things, I don't think Jesus ever said anything that he regret. Because he always thought about his words and his actions. And everything that came out of his mouth, it was with precise focus, always with a purpose in mind. And so, yes, he says some crazy things, but there's always a purpose in mind. And so no matter what he did it with purpose. And today we're going to read something wild that Jesus says, but I believe he had a purpose behind it. If you have your Bibles, open them up to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14. It's in the New Testament. It's the third book, Old Testament, New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem because Jesus knew his purpose, and he's trying to get to the cross to finish God's work, to die for our sins. But while he's taking that journey, he's trying to connect with as many people as he can. He's trying to teach as many people as possible. And at this point in his ministry, he has acquired a lot of followers. He's got disciples, he's got the 12, he's got some other followers. But because of his wisdom and because of his miracles and because of the things that he was doing, people just wanted to follow him. People wanted to be where Jesus was. They wanted to see him or hear him or touch him. And so because of that, he kind of had a superficial momentum that was following him from town to town, from village to village. And it's not because of Jesus, it's because of the people. They were there for the wrong reasons. And I'm sure as he looked out into the crowds of people, he could see, and he could see someone's face, and he could tell, I know that person is a believer. I know they're a disciple, but that person over there, I can see their heart. They're just here because they want to see some magic or something. And so a lot of people were following Jesus based on feeling, based on emotion. But Jesus wants thinking, intelligent, and logical followers. And so in his following, he had believers and he had bandwagoners. They were just there because everyone else was doing it. And that's where we'll pick up in Luke 14, 25. This is what it says. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus. These are the believers and these are the bandwagoners. It's a large crowd. And turning to them, he said, and this is where one of our crazy lines comes from. He says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And you might read that and you might be thinking, what you want me to hate? First off, that doesn't seem right. You want me to hate? And then you want me to hate my family, my brother, my sister, my mom, my dad? Now, I don't know about you, but when I read that verse and it says, you got to hate your father and you got to hate your brother, I'm like, okay, that's easy. But if you got to hate your mom and you got to hate your wife, I was like, Jesus, that's where I draw the line. Okay, I cannot hate them. Those dudes over there, I can put up with them. But these ladies, I love them so much. I cannot do that. I was in Mission Viejo a few years ago leading the junior high ministry before I got the job here at Cross City. And we had a student. Her name was Hannah. And she was a junior higher. She was like 13. And she was a problem. I mean, she was HM, high maintenance. Okay, maybe some of you know some HM people out there just like, oh, these people, they drive me crazy. We're supposed to love them anyway. But this student is in group, and I get a call from her small group leader. She's in a high maintenance mode. She's freaking out. She's crying and blubbering all over the place, and she's arguing and bullying her small group leader. So they call me, and they say, you got to get over here. You got to fix this. I'm like, what's happening? What's going on? Hannah, let's talk. Small group leader, let's talk. And they tell me that they were reading this verse. You got to hate your mother, hate your father. And Hannah is saying, if Jesus told me to hate my parents, I don't want to follow him. I'm not doing it. She kind of pouted and cried. I was like, Hannah, he's exaggerating. He's using a metaphor. He's using an analogy, a hyperbole. It's not at face value. She can only read the verse. She could only read it at face value. And I'm like, if we were to read this verse at face value, I'm not sure any of us would want to follow Jesus if we had to hate our families. And some of you, you're like, yeah, if that's what it takes, I'm in. I do not like my family. My mom, my dad, I was hurt. I was adopted. I was abused. I was something. And you might be thinking, yeah, I'm in. And if that's you, I pray that's not the case. I pray for reconciliation with you and your family or whoever it was. But replace family with best friend. You got to hate your best friend. Replace best friend with anything that you love. I mean, that's the point Jesus is trying to make. We're to love him more than anything, that it should seem like we hate everything else except for him. Our current priority needs to take a backseat to Jesus Christ. And the word for hatred that's used here, it actually translates to love a great deal less. It doesn't actually mean just to hate and to not care about. It just means to love less. You have to love it less than Jesus. It's got to seem like you hate it compared to how much we love and adore Jesus Christ. So you might love yourself, you might love your relationships, you might love your possessions, but with Jesus not anymore, it seems like you hate your life compared to how much you love him and how much you love others. And Jesus is telling the crowd, his followers, his disciples, his bandwagon people, either start following me and truly acting like it or get off the bandwagon. Because he's not interested in fake, half-hearted people. He wants real, true, authentic disciples and believers, which leads me to point number one, abandon past priorities. And all the points are kind of fancy points, and I'm going to kind of put it in my people terms. Get your priorities straight. Get your priorities straight. What does it look like to get your priorities in line? Because we all know that Jesus should probably be our number one priority. But if we actually examined ourselves, is he? Is he number one? Is he at the top? And so Jesus, he's going to up the ante. He just said, hate your family. And now he's gonna up the ante with verse 27. He says this, whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. You got to carry your cross. And I read that and I'm like, hold on a second. First, you want me to hate. Now you want me to go pick up a torture device used for murdering people, and you want me to pick it up, carry it, and follow you. I don't think so. And the people hearing this, the crowds that he was speaking to, they would have understood exactly what he was saying. Because everyone knew what a cross meant and represented in that time. I think that they would have been horrified, and I think they probably would have given out like a, I'm not picking up a cross. That is awful. That is the worst thing you could ever pick up. Because the people of this day, they knew that if you died on a cross, you first had to carry the cross. They knew if a crucifixion took place, they didn't just hang a person on a cross. They put the cross on that person, and they carried it to their death. They carried it to their demise. There's a Roman general named Varus, and at one time he crucified 2,000 Jews at one time and lined up their crosses on the road to Galilee. So the Jewish people walking on that road would have been horrified with what they saw. And so when Jesus is saying, pick up your cross and follow me, I'm sure they have this image or this story of 2,000 of their brothers and sisters being crucified and murdered on a cross. And Jesus says, go pick it up and follow me. And we're saying, where are we going? And Jesus is saying, to die. Pick up your cross, follow me. We're going to die. Now, if those are the circumstances it takes to follow Jesus, I would not be here. Not only am I very weak, I can't carry much, I have a very low pain tolerance, I'm not getting crucified. But are we actually believers or are we bandwagoners? And if you are truly picking up your cross, I believe you are actually, point number two, dying to yourself. We need to die to ourselves. If we want to be a true disciple of Jesus, we have to put ourselves in a lower position than Jesus and the people around us. If we want Jesus to be our priority, he makes it clear that the one who bears his cross would follow the life and pattern of Jesus. And that's following Jesus at its simplest form, because he carried a cross to his death, and so are we. And we got to do that if we want to follow him wholeheartedly. And the fact of what we're going to be looking at is Jesus makes extreme, absolute, exclusive statements to discourage the fake fans. He wants real believers, real followers. So how do we follow Jesus? How do you follow Jesus? Is it half-heartedly? Superficially? Sunday mornings from 11 to 12:15? Either choose to follow him wholeheartedly or get off the bandwagon. That's what he wants. As I was studying for this sermon, I was reading a book and I came across this quote. I'm going to share it with you. It's from a guy. His name's John MacArthur. He's a pastor, author. He's a professor. He says this: Jesus did not ask for a makeover. He asks for a takeover. He didn't ask for a makeover. Makeovers are temporary. Ladies, some of you know about this. You've received a makeover, and then 2 weeks later, you look the same. Your husband says, here's $50, go get another one. I don't know. A takeover is eternal. A takeover lasts forever. Are we allowing Jesus to take over our lives, our minds, our hearts, our thoughts, our actions, our words, and our souls? Or are we just playing pretend? Are we in the makeover section? Who remembers the show Extreme Makeover? It's where they take an ugly person like Pastor Dave and turn him into something beautiful like Pastor Brent. I mean, it's just like amazing. It's just like the wow, what happened, okay? They made a spinoff of that show called Extreme Makeover Home Edition. And maybe you've seen it, maybe you used to watch it. I was in my grandma's house. Grandma comes to Saturday and first service, so I can talk a little more about her house. It was a fine house, but it was a grandma house. It was kind of old. It was kind of like weird carpet. You know that distinct smell you walk in? You're like, grandma's house, okay? It wasn't fresh baked cookies either, okay? And so we're watching this show. I'm in my grandma's house, and they just blew up this house. I mean, it was a shanty, and now it's a mansion, and they're going crazy. It was a two-bedroom. Now it's a six-bedroom. They got six bathrooms. Like, I didn't even know I needed to go to the bathroom that much, but now I can, and I am just amazed. I'm like seven. I'm looking at this house. I'm in my grandma's house. I look at my grandma. I look at the house. I look at my grandma. I said, Grandma, we should get your house on this show. We should remake your house. Nothing's better than a seven-year-old killing your confidence in one sentence, okay? But I was thinking about my statement to my grandma. Not only was it rude, I didn't think about it, okay? I was too young. But that's a makeover. It doesn't last forever. I don't care if you take a person. I don't care if you take a house. I don't care if you take this church and you redo it. You make it over. It's temporary. It's not going to last forever. And Jesus knew that too. Jesus knows that a makeover in our lives is not going to cut it. He wants a takeover. And so are you going to allow him to take your life, heart, and soul over to be a true, dedicated, authentic disciple of him? Jesus continues with his analogy in verses 28 through 30. He says this: suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. And then he adds another analogy right after that. He talks about a king with 10,000 men going up against a king with 20,000 men. And he says the king with 10,000 is going to see the king with 20,000, and he's going to have to estimate the cost. It's going to be too much resources. My men are going to lose their lives. This is not worth it. The cost is too high. So he's going to send out a peace treaty and try to delegate some terms. And then Jesus lays down another line. He says, in the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Jesus wants us to consider and count the cost. Now, in that day, if you were to build that tower, it was for protection. And so if you needed $10,000 to build the tower, but you started and you only had three, and you only laid the foundation, the town, the village, they're going to see that. And in that culture, they'd make fun of that family. They make fun of that house. Oh, look at the Rutherfords over there. They only have half a tower. Oh, my goodness. And they would become the laughingstock. They'd become the town joke. And so the person considering building the tower, we need to sit down and calculate the cost. And following Jesus is similar. We need to count the cost. Are we sitting down? Are we crunching the numbers? What will it take for us to follow him? Because in earthly terms, from an earthly perspective, it might cost a lot of money. It might cost us everything in a sense. But from an eternal perspective, we gain everything. Because we get to spend an eternity with Jesus. Jesus shows the wisdom and all the analogies of assessing the commitment involved to following him, because he's not interested in emotion-driven, superficial, self-seeking, temporary followers. He wants real, true, authentic disciples, which leads me to point number three, a praise to present powers. And Zach terms, count the cost. Count the cost. Do you have enough? Are you willing to go the distance? Are you going to complete the tower? Are you going to jump in and have to back out half-heartedly and become the laughingstock of the town? In the book of Revelation, it tells us that being lukewarm, being a half-hearted disciple, actually makes Jesus vomit. He says, you're not hot, you're not cold, you're kind of lukewarm, you're kind of gross. I'm going to spit you out. Following Jesus will make you a target from other people, from our neighbors, from the enemy. We might have to sacrifice something. We might have to give something up. But I'm telling you, that earthly cost is not greater than a heavenly reward. And total commitment to Jesus is not easy. It involves surrender, pain, suffering, and carrying your own cross to your own demise. It's not for the half-hearted. Fast forward a few chapters to Luke 18, 18. Jesus, once again, he's in the middle of a teaching spree. He's kind of going crazy. He's again, on his way to Jerusalem to finish God's work on the cross to die for our sins. And there's a conversation between Jesus and a rich young ruler. Maybe you're familiar with the story. I'm going to summarize it. He approaches Jesus and he says, Jesus, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus says, you're a good Jewish boy. You know the law. Honor your father and mother. Ironic. He told us to hate them earlier. Don't commit adultery. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't lie. And the rich young ruler says, I've kept all of these since I was a boy. I'm good to go. What else is there? And Jesus responds with this, you still lack one thing. He tells them, sell everything you have, give it to the poor. You will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me. But Luke 18, 23 tells us when he heard this, he became very sad because he was very wealthy. The rich young ruler counted the cost and his earthly cost. He deemed it was too expensive. He couldn't give up his earthly wealth. He had too much. He valued money over God. Church, it is vital to consider the cost of being a disciple. It might cost us something, but it costs us more to reject Christ. Jesus wants dedicated disciples, not half-baked bandwagoners, which leads me to point number four. We need an allegiance to future privileges. If we are going to be a true disciple, we need to base our commitment and our choice to follow him based on the future promise and privilege of heaven. I'm excited. I'm excited to get to heaven. I have hopefully some years ahead of me. But when I get there, I'm going to see my friends, my family, and I'm going to be able to worship God forever. And for me, that's an easy decision for me. And I want you to pledge allegiance to your future privileges. With that, though, I need you to know three things. And these are subpoints. They're not in your notes. I need you to never assume that you need to clean yourself up before you come and commit to Jesus. Because some of us were like, I still have this sin in my life. I'm still dealing with and struggling with that. It doesn't matter. Jesus wants a commitment from you to follow him. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what you will do. However, with that, the second subpoint is we can't give people the impression that Jesus won't want to clean them up once they come to him. Because if you come to him wholeheartedly and you say, God, I know I'm messed up. I know I'm a sinner. I know I got problems, but I'm coming to you right now. He's going to work in your life in ways that you've never seen or imagined. And he is hopefully going to change your life from the inside out, but you have to allow him to do that. But you first have to count the cost. Is the sacrifice now worth an eternity later? And thirdly, moments of failure do not discredit or invalidate the direction of your heart. Because if you wholeheartedly choose to commit and follow Jesus, and you're all in, yeah, we're going to mess up from time to time. Has anyone ever messed up in here? Maybe just once, twice? If messing up, if sin discredited anyone, I would not be able to be on this stage right now speaking to you. I'd have to be locked away in some closet because I'd be so bad and vile, you wouldn't even want to get close to me. But because I've counted the cost, and because I've committed, and because my heart is moving in the right direction, Jesus allows me to work with him. He's actually working through me, but I'm working with him and alongside of him. So my question is, what do we do? What do you do? What does it look like to abandon your past priorities? If you want to get your priorities in check, if you need to get your priorities in order, we need to identify what our number one priority is. Again, we know it should be Jesus. Like, duh. It's like, oh, Sunday school answer. Jesus, he's always the answer. But he's not always our number one. We need to identify right now what in your life is taking up your time. What is taking up your thoughts? What is taking your attention? What are you thinking about? What are you focusing on? What are you doing constantly? Who's stressed? Who's worried? Why do we let the stress and worry be the number one priority in our lives? And maybe for some of us, it's our job. Maybe things are rough right now and we gotta focus on some things. Maybe we're jobless and our priority is landing that next job. Maybe it's our family. Maybe your kids are acting up, so you send them to me, and then I'm like, oh man, what am I supposed to do? Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a friendship. Maybe it's a marriage. It's on the rocks. You're trying to focus on it. Maybe it's your money. Maybe it's your finances. Maybe some of us in this room, we're like the rich young man. Maybe we're just a little too materialistic. We're trying to get to the lake 100 times this summer, take the new RV out cross country. If you want Jesus to be your number one, some of us, we might have to give some of that stuff up. Maybe. I'm not sure. Jesus calls certain people to do certain things and vice versa. But Jesus is saying this, we are stewards of everything and owners of nothing. And if Jesus calls you to give something up, we got to do it because loving obedience is what we're called to do. I was living in Orange County, Irvine, the best city in the world besides Clovis. And then God says, move to Clovis. I said, no, 3 times. Here I am. 75, sunny with the beach right there. Oh man, it was great, but I love you guys more. Jesus may also challenge and require an individual maybe over here to do or to give something up. And over here, I had to sell my RV. I just got my RV. I don't know. Jesus allows things to happen to certain people, but some people are not willing to follow Jesus because of the things that he asks us to give up. We need to identify what the most important thing in our lives is. You don't need to stop doing it. You don't need to hate it. You just need to love it less than Jesus. You got to love it less than Jesus. What does it look like to die to ourselves? Once you identify what your number one priority is, you kind of flip it around. And you die to yourself by putting Jesus and other people above yourself. Our verse for our high school ministry, our theme, our group, is called 330, which is John 330. He must become greater, I must become less. That's what dying to yourself looks like, becoming less than. Not to become a rug or a carpet to get walked on, but you just simply say, God, you are going to be number one. You do the things that he wants you to do. You do what your wife needs you to do, what your children need you to do, what your boss needs you to do, what your neighbor needs you to do. You don't just stop doing or stop being. You become more like Jesus by doing the things that he would do. That's what dying to yourself looks like. The selfish version of you gives way for the selfless version of you. And if you're anything like me, selflessness is hard. I like me. Most people do, you know what I mean? Okay. Just kidding. But we want to take. We want this and we want that. We got to learn to give, man. We got to give it up for Jesus. We need to appraise the present powers. We need to count the cost. What in your life is it going to cost you to be the best disciple of Jesus that you can be? And for some of us, it might be our finances. Like, maybe we're not tithing. Maybe we need to take that step of faith, and we need to give that 10%. Maybe we give 10. Maybe it needs to be 10.5%. Maybe we just need to give of our time. Where are you serving in our church? Where are you giving back in our church? How are you serving God by giving up your time? It might cost us some of our priorities. It might cost us time on the lake. It might cost us time cooking hot dogs on the 4th of July. We could be doing something else. What's it going to cost you to follow Jesus? But think about this. What is it going to cost you to not follow Jesus? We need to pledge allegiance to future privileges. We aren't called to be superficial fake fans, but rather lifelong learners and students of Jesus. And if we commit to him wholeheartedly and we follow him, we'll have a privilege and a promise of heaven waiting for us. And so to sum it all up today, church, number 5, we must submit everything to Jesus in order to be a true disciple. We must submit everything to Jesus in order to be a true disciple. What in your life do you need to submit to him today? What's it going to cost you? Imagine with me for a moment what your lives would look like. What would our lives look like if we were all truly committed disciples of Jesus Christ? What would your life look like if your priorities were in check? What would your life look like if you died to yourself instead of overindulged in yourself? What would your life look like if you counted and really considered the cost of what it meant to follow him? What would your life look like if you pledged your allegiance to his promises and his privileges? Each and every day, and each and every day you woke up and you said, God, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to obey you. That's what I'm called to do. I truly believe our lives, our homes, our workplaces, our church would look differently. We wouldn't have an auditorium filled with fake bandwagon fans, and that's not what I'm calling you. But if you're like, I'm convicted, that's Jesus telling you that. But we'd have believing disciples who understood the cost and who were willing to pay the price today for the future promises of tomorrow. We'd have disciples who chased after Jesus, who strive to be more and more like him each and every day, who love people better. Disciples who obeyed when Jesus calls and demands. I don't want to do that. I think you should think about it. Just think about it. Maybe that's what you need to do. I'd be willing to bet that most of us in this room, we've made the decision to follow Jesus. And our priorities are in check, and we give and we serve, and we're right where we're supposed to be. If that's you, bless you. Keep doing on what you're doing. Keep working on yourself and working on your relationship with God. You're in a good spot. But for others of us, I mean, we've made the decision to follow Jesus, but right now in this season in life, in this time, our priorities are not in line, man. Like, we're too focused on work. We're too focused on this or that. Right now, you can choose. You can choose again to be a wholehearted disciple of Jesus. You can get your priorities in line. What do you need to rid yourself of? What is it going to cost you? What do you need to stop doing in order to focus on Jesus, the one worth focusing on? And still others of us, you might be in this room and you might be considering and counting the cost. And if that's you, my challenge for you today is this. Keep counting. What's going to cost more, to follow Jesus now or to not follow him? And if that's you, and if you've been considering the cost and you've been counting the cost, and maybe you're on the fence and you're kind of deciding, should I go? Should I commit? Should I do it? You don't have to get yourself cleaned up. You don't have to be all prim and proper and perfect. You can just be you. But if you make that wholehearted decision to follow Jesus, he's going to transform you and change your life from the inside out. Most of us have been there. We've been changed. We've been made new somehow. And that's why we keep showing up, because we love God and we love Jesus, and we know that each and every Sunday, each and every Bible study, each and every small group, we're growing and learning, we're disciples, we're followers of Jesus. And so if that's you, if you need to make any decision today, if you need to be baptized and take that step in your spiritual journey, we're going to stand and sing, and you can come down to the front if you need anything at all. God bless you. Happy 4th. Let's stand and let's sing.